USA Insulation, 513-381-3626, 513-381-FOAM. USA Insulation.
55 KRC on demand. This is Brian Thomas. Listen to Brian weekdays 5 till 9 a.m. on 55 KRC, the talk station.
News, weather alerts, and even contests only our Facebook fans can get in on. Just click on the link at 55krc.com.
It's 7:05 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Tuesday, and a very happy one to you. Hope you're having a nice morning so far. Yeah, I am pleased to welcome back to the 55 KRC Morning Show, Ohio Secretary of State John Houston. It's a pleasure to have you on, Secretary of State Houston.
Hey, great to be with you, Brian.
And a good day, too. We have a special election going on today. I think a lot of people waking up today not really realizing that they can vote today.
Well, in 23 counties across the state, there are special elections, and people can go out and vote from 6:30 this morning until 7:30 tonight. If you wonder if there's something on your ballot, you can go to myohiovote.com and find out. But in Southwest Ohio, most notably, we have Arlington Heights, Village of Cleves, City of Norwood all have levies in Hamilton County. Deerfield Township has a replacement levy for police and fire. Franklin City Schools, Lebanon local schools also have issues. And then this is also the first day for voting in the Cincinnati mayoral primary, and that's the absentee voting process. So voters wanting to participate in that can request that absentee ballot or go to the Board of Elections and vote in Hamilton County. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
There certainly is, and I'll just refer people to my blog page, 55krc.com. We have a link to the special local ones you mentioned. I think most all the ones that are on that list. We have an opportunity to review yesterday's poll today regarding the mayoral race. You have a choice between Jim Burns, John Cranley, Sandra Queen Noble, and Roxanne Qualls. They all each had an opportunity to comment to the Enquirer about their position on the streetcar, Secretary of State Houston, and some pretty interesting comments right there on my blog page.
I saw some of them. Pretty good.
We're just having a little bit of fun with that, too. And why not? Anyway, Vice Mayor Roxanne Qualls was the least vote getter. She only got 2% of yesterday's poll today vote. John Cranley way out in front. Anyhow, a lot of people want to know. I know we've got primaries coming up. The mayoral deal, that's today, of course. Citizens of the city of Cincinnati can vote in that. November election's coming up. But I think everything that's on everyone's concern list that I keep hearing about, especially in light of recent news reports, voter fraud. People voting multiple times. People listing their work address as their mailing address and their home address. What is the Office of the Secretary of State doing to help give voters confidence that their elections are not being hijacked?
Well, we always want to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And I think we sent a pretty strong message after the November election that we're going to review all cases of alleged voter fraud. We're going to investigate them, and we're going to make sure that if there's evidence that it's referred to the prosecutor's office, and if it warrants, they're going to be prosecuted. So several people have been held accountable. There is jail time involved, and it sends two messages. One to the voters that are doing it the right way, that we're not going to let your vote get diluted by cheaters. And for those who cheat, you're going to be held accountable. It's just not worth it. Don't do it.
But what about the argument? And you properly mentioned that you discover them and you refer them to the prosecutor's office, and the prosecutor's office has discretion on whether or not to prosecute based upon the underlying facts. Does it appear as though a crime has been committed? Is it worth the prosecutorial resources to go after someone in sort of those fence-sitting questionable cases? But the biggest problem to me seems that in those questionable cases, people profess to have been confused, or they got an absentee ballot and they voted and they voted twice. Oh, it was by accident. There are apparently way too many options of when and where to vote. I know you mentioned it's a goal to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat, but in the effort to make it easy to vote and keeping all this time open and all these windows of opportunity and avenues and places to vote, you've made it, or the system has made it very easy to, let's just say, and give them the benefit of the doubt, to get confused.
Well, there's a couple things there. Just because you try to vote twice, in the handful of cases that this happened, there are only a couple of them where they were actually successful. The system catches that. The people that said that they got confused, well, their vote they didn't get to have two votes counted. They may have tried to cast an absentee vote and then a provisional ballot on election day because they didn't know whether they sent it in or not. But that vote didn't count. So I want to make sure that people know that that's the case. But this is the law. I have to implement the law. 35 days of early voting and the like. What I'm also doing, though, working with the county election boards across the state, is building in the security to make sure that if a voter tries to cast that second ballot, that we catch it. And if there is an element of criminality involved in what they're trying to do by deceiving the system, then we're making sure that they get prosecuted.
And I got to ask you, you did use the word security, and I had written down voting equipment with a question mark after it. I know a lot of people have concerns about how votes are tabulated in the software, but security to identify this, what layers or how is it that you are capable of flagging the multiple vote that people actually inadvertently do or do intentionally?
Well, we've upgraded the technology of the voting system, really.
Oh, you're working with the NSA now, huh?
Not quite that far. But far enough that we can use publicly available data, and making sure that what the voter gives us is also what the voter gives us to register is the same stuff that the voters give us on election day, and make sure that we account for how many times someone might try to vote, and if they do, then we make sure we catch them and prosecute them, and literally, you know. I'm not capable of explaining the technology behind all of this. This is my tech people are better at those kinds of things than I am, but I'm telling you, we have built a much better system. We've improved the voter rolls. We've cleaned 230,000 deceased voters off the rolls. We have tried to make sure we're working with other states. One of the things we found, 20 people tried to vote in Ohio and in another state on election day, and we caught them. And those folks are also going to be prosecuted. We had one case where a voter casted a ballot in person in Kentucky and in Ohio on the same day.
Oh, geez.
That person is going to be prosecuted.
Have you discovered, or has anyone alluded to or suggested that there is a maybe perhaps, I don't use the word conspiracy, but I think of RICO, like a racketeering statute, where people have coordinated and intentionally encourage people to vote multiple times? In other words, has anybody discovered a concerted effort behind the scenes to get people to do this, or are these typically, or have you discovered just purely random acts by individuals?
These are individually initiated, and I want to put this in context. We had 5.6 million people voted, and so far we have 270 people that we have referred to prosecutors, local law enforcement, for either prosecution or further investigation. So this is a small number of people, but the answer to your question is no, it's not orchestrated. These seem to be acts by individual voters, but Brian, I want to tell you something. This stuff was not pursued in the past the way we're pursuing it. We asked all 88 counties, because you know there's a lot of talk about this stuff leading up to the election. The election happens, somebody wins in a presidential election, and then everybody forgets about it. Well, I haven't forgotten about it. We're going to make sure that this becomes a priority in the system to not only put the protections in place prior to election day, but to do our due diligence after election day. Go back and look at everything that happened, and make sure that if there was an attempt to vote twice, if there was an irregularity, that is investigated, and if the information warrants, that it's sent to the prosecutor and the person is prosecuted.
Has there been any effort of late, legislatively or otherwise, out of your office even, to change or transform further how Ohioans vote? I know Indiana, of course, has a photo ID requirement.
The one thing again, technology is our friend. It taking this mass amount of voter data and making sure that the integrity of the process is intact. I would like to move more of that away from the old paper-based system and more to a technology system. For example, if you want to register to vote, I would prefer people do that online using their driver's license number that we can check against other databases to make sure that the person is registered at their proper address, to make sure that they're not registered more than once. Those things help us handle this mass amount of data, if we can have access to it digitally rather than the old paper-based system, I'd like to see us move more in that direction.
All right, and before you leave, Secretary of State John Husted, I got to ask you, because you mentioned earlier, you know, it's something your tech people can better understand and explain, and I get that all day long, but I got to ask you to either offer some comfort or confirm suspicions, however it works. A lot of people question the vote because of technology. They don't see a piece of paper. They don't have something physical to look at. They need to punch make their selections. It goes into a computer. It's tabulated electronically. People worry about how the software is created, who's minding the store, can it be manipulated, all that behind the scenes stuff. Can you offer some comfort to my listeners about how that works?
Yeah, it works a lot better than the old paper-based system. I can promise you that, because we have a lot more checks and balances in place. It is a bipartisan system at the local level. Democrats and Republicans are both involved in doing this. We have many more checks and balances due to the technology that we put in place to make sure that people aren't registered multiple times. There's no way for us to check a paper system to see if somebody's registered in Warren County, Cincinnati, and in Kentucky. Okay, there's no way to do that under a paper-based system where you're going to technology allows us to search electronically to make sure that nobody's registered more than once.
I got that, but I guess my question goes more to, and I know my question goes more to the actual vote. If I vote for, you know, John Smith for trustee.
Well, the great thing about this stuff is not linked. This is not a network system, as you will understand. It's not a network system. The data is tabulated precinct by precinct, okay, and that data is then added up in a manual sort of way to give you the result. This is not a network system where it's corruptible, where people can go in and try to affect the results. It's just not that kind of a system. It's much more secure than that.
And it's overseen by both Republicans and Democrats.
Republicans and Democrats who have. Yeah. It's secure. That part of the system, I want to provide every reassurance, is very secure.
I appreciate that, and just kind of open. I just offer out loud. When are you going to ask the libertarians to help look and oversee this? Just a thought, you know.
You know what? Anybody that wants to be involved in helping to provide security for the elections process is welcome to help with that.
You have an open invitation, Ohio Secretary of State John Husted. Thank you so much for being on the program again. It's always good to talk to you, and you got a big, very busy year this year, so I wish you the best of luck, and may things go very smoothly.
Hey, thanks. It will.
718. That's confidence right there. 718, 55 KRC, the talk station. Confidence from Team Shabri, too. Peter Shabri. He'll sell your house. I'm pretty confident. I've never recommended a real estate agent before, but Peter Shabri has an amazing ability to sell houses. You talk to him, you sit down the first time, and you establish a sell-by date and a price, a minimum price and sell-by date. You both agree to this. If the time comes and goes and he doesn't have your house sold by the sell-by date, he has it buy for cash for your previously agreed-on price. Probably not going to happen. He does a great job of selling houses, oftentimes right before they even go on the market. They sell a house in a day. I got Ron Ebley, heard about Team Shabri when he had to sell his home in Blue Ash, retained Peter, and again, one-day sale for thousands over his asking price, and that's the way Peter Shabri rolls. Faster, top dollar, price and a deadline you agree to, has your house bought for cash, and at any time, if you are ever not satisfied with Peter and the work that he's doing, fire him. It's okay. I doubt it's going to happen. I think it's more likely you're going to start packing. So give him a call today. It's 513-708-3000, 708-3000, online at, 708-3000.com. 739 at 55 KRC, the talk station. It's Tuesday already. Tomorrow's listener lunch, and I hope you can make it. Welcoming back to the 55 KRC Morning Show, Congressman Steve Shabbat. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Steve, good to hear from you again.
Hey, thank you, Brian. It's great to be with you and especially with your listeners again today.
I formally invite you to lunch tomorrow. Congressman Brad Winstrup's going to be at Olives in Clifton tomorrow. You, of course, are welcome. And I understand your guys' schedule. I've talked to Brad a couple of times since he's been back. And one thing after another, events here, events there. So if you can make it, of course, formal invitation here today. If not, we'll look forward to seeing you down the road in another one.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Fantastic. Congressman Shabbat, I have to start off, and I know we want to talk about immigration, but Obamacare and the employer mandate, which of course Barack Obama unilaterally with his veto pen, which I didn't know we had the line item veto, and of course we don't. He said we are no longer, we the government, aren't going to enforce the employer mandate. It is in the law as a shall begin January 1st of this coming year. If Barack Obama can unilaterally excise a clause out of a bill, does that not make Congress completely irrelevant?
It certainly is indicative of that.
Yeah.
And my argument would be if you're going to you're going to delay the employer mandate, you ought to get rid of or delay the mandate on all individuals as well. Why in the heck are we going to favor certain businesses but make individuals continue to comply with this thing right on time?
Understood.
Let's delay on everybody or get rid of it altogether.
That's a fairness argument, and I don't disagree with it, Congressman. I really don't. I think the whole thing actually should be thrown out, but that's a different discussion. So the point, though, is that idea and the reality of it, voting, it must be done by Congress. The law says something that must be done, and there are no caveats, exceptions, or exclusions. There is no delegation to the executive branch on the date of implementation. You pass the law. So if you want to change it, it's got to pass through the House. It's got to pass through the Senate. It's got to be signed into change by the law by the president. None of that has happened. So who enforces the law? Now, I know you voted in the House to say, fine, President, we'll kick the employer mandate. We'll kick also the individual mandate. That's going to have to go through the Senate and be signed into law by the president. Between now and then, the employer mandate is on hold by virtue of executive, well, whim. Who enforces the law as written?
Well, it would be the Justice Department. It would be Eric Holder. And I don't. How confident are we in what he's
zero
about and whether he's going to let politics enter into this or not?
Zero.
So it's a terrible situation.
But is there one that has an answer? I keep struggling with this. I mean, isn't it Congress's duty then if the Department of Justice refuses to open an investigation or, candidly, a prosecution or seeking to enforce the law as written? Doesn't Congress have an option? Can we not get a special counsel appointed? And shouldn't that be what's done? Because the same violation of the rule of law is going on with regard to aid to Egypt. We can't by law. It's a law on the books. Fund Egypt if there's been a coup. There was a coup.
Certainly, you know, you could use resources, taxpayer resources, and hire attorneys and file a lawsuit against the president on this particular issue. What the thinking is at this point is rather than spend the resources on that, let's actually say we agree. And we actually had a vote in Congress, at least in the House.
I know that.
That we do. We agree that we ought not to have that mandate go into effect on businesses, but we'll do you one better. We ought not to have it go into effect on individuals either. Why discriminate against individuals in favor of businesses? And both of those passed in the House. Virtually all the Democrats, well, actually a couple of dozen Democrats voted with us on that. But what you said, Brian, could happen. I mean, you could file a lawsuit at this point. The leadership has decided to take a different route.
But I mean, I'm frustrated by the leadership, and I think everybody else is as well, Congressman, because the rule of law is being trampled on. And if somebody doesn't step up and do something, and it's certainly not going to be Eric Holder in the Department of Justice, he doesn't care. He's a violator of the rule of law as well. Check out what he's done to the AP and everybody else whose shorts he's investigating. But they're not doing it. And
it's
Congress
like the latest
is
example. It's the latest example, Brian, of the administration basically flaunting the law. You could talk about it fast and furious. You could talk about it in not enforcing our immigration laws, on moving forward with, in effect, the Dream Act and allowing people to stay here, even though when they're caught, they're supposed to be kicked out of the country. So
no
the
one's
administration in all these instances is not following not only the letter of the law, but the intent of the law. And so you have a rogue administration in many ways here, at least as far as enforcing the law goes.
And I have to chuckle since you expressed fiscal concern over spending on a lawsuit. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if we're going to ultimately have some rule of law followed in this country, I would think that that is a wonderful return on the investment. And we spill more in a moment's time on the telephone in government than it would cost to fund an entire litigation all the way through the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the only difference I have with you, Brian, is that what he did, we basically agree with to the extent that we didn't want the employer mandate
but
to go into effect.
I know.
It should be much broader than that. So
I know. But until the Senate takes it up, passes it, and it's signed by the president, we have a rogue administration that has an illustration after illustration after illustration ignored the rule of law. And I understand it's the same thing with Egypt, because of course we like Egypt's military, and we obviously have fallen out of our view with the Morsi administration. But the law already says we can't fund a country that has been kicked out by a military coup. He was elected. Yep. That's
what
the law says.
What you said before, Brian, about, until the Senate takes it up and passes it, basically this United States Senate is in the president's hip pocket. Harry Reid is at his beck and call, and he'll basically do whatever Obama tells him to do. And that's why we've got a standstill right now. You've got a conservative House, you've got a liberal Senate, and you got a liberal president. And, it's frustrating as heck at this point in time, and not a lot gets done. But unfortunately, that's the administration that was elected to a second term not too long ago.
It just seems to me that we've abdicated complete control through inaction to the president of the United States, who is doing things that are an absolute I'm sorry, it's just not only unconstitutional, just completely ignoring the law. Unless we have some grasp and some support for and some respect for the rule of law, we in essence have a dictatorship going on right now. Congressman Steve Shabbat, don't go away. I got to ask you about immigration reform. Speaking of, why do we need new laws when the old ones aren't being enforced, and what good will it do? Got to get your impressions on that, as well as whether we're going to defund Obamacare. Don't go away. Congressman Steve Shabbat will continue right after these brief words. Schneider Home Equipment since 1935. 1935. This is a third generation. A-plus with the BBB, of course. Angie Super Service, 2012 award winners, of course. And a business where tradition is important. Knowledge, respect, courteous are words that you'll immediately associate with Schneider Home Equipment. And what do? They do your outside of your house. Whatever is going on the outside, that's Schneider Home Equipment. Need a new front door? You call Schneider. Need a patio cover, a porch enclosure? Schneider. Screen enclosure? Absolutely. Awnings, rails, columns, you get it. Outside of the house? It's Schneider. Folks you can trust. Great people, your neighbors, and again, since 1935, I'm always impressed that businesses can stay in business that long, and of course, it's because they're doing it right. Free, no obligation estimate. The people to call, the people my sister called, and absolutely was just grinning ear to ear with the price and the work that was done. 522-1200, 513-522-1200, on web at SchneiderHomeEquipment.com. 750-855 KRCD Talk Station. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. Brian Thomas here, continuing my conversation with Congressman Steve Shabbat. Talked about enforcement of the rule of law, generally speaking, and that falls squarely with the next topic, immigration, which is being discussed. I got an interesting email from somebody who says, well, the law is being broken. The law must change. And that seems to be where we are. We have a current law which says what illegal and legal is. We have a system of, and as slow and painful as it may be to go through, we have a system of getting citizenship and visas and green cards. And we also have people that ignore that and cross the border without permission. That's been going on. No one is enforcing the current law. And so now there's clamoring for a new law. Where are you on this, Congressman Shabbat?
I think the Senate bill that was passed was a mess. It was basically amnesty or a so-called pathway for citizenship now in return for some vague promises of increased border security later. I think that's a terrible way to go.
Especially when no one's enforcing the law.
You pass some more laws saying, well, this time we're really going to enforce it. How can you trust an administration that isn't enforcing the existing law?
Yep.
And I would say that's the same under the previous administration, which was a Republican administration. They were not sufficiently enforcing the law. And in many ways, the Bush administration and the Obama administration were more or less on the same side on this. Obama's a little worse, but it's just a matter of degree. So what we ought to be doing is securing our borders, actually doing that, which we can do if we were bound and determined to do it, but we're not. And the federal government ought to be working with states and local law enforcement entities rather than working against them. So rather than do what the Senate did and pass this so-called comprehensive immigration reform package, which in my view will never work or never be enforced, there are things which we could fix now, and those are the things which in the Judiciary Committee that I one of the committees I sit on, that we've passed bills that deal with the E-Verify system, you know, streamlining how employers can verify whether a person is actually an American citizen or not, requiring local law enforcement officers and federal officials to work together, doing something about agricultural guest workers and, you know, those types of things. So there's other things we can do short of this so-called comprehensive immigration reform, in my view.
Well, and I keep defaulting to, I believe, what is the fact is that, you know, my ancestors, I believe my great-great-grandfather from Ireland didn't come here and without anything other than a hope. And there was no welfare state, and no one cared that we. As a matter of fact, we embraced the concept of the melting pot and immigration because people came here and got work and did jobs, and there was plenty of work and jobs here for them. The only reason people have any problem with immigration, I think, is because we're worried about overwhelming our social network. It overwhelms schools. There's no ability to plan. If people that came to this country were not ever eligible for the social welfare state, then we would not have a problem with anybody coming here.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I think essentially that's correct.
Okay.
I think that, and that is one of the problems. What has happened is many people come here with best of intentions, which is to work, support their family, et cetera. But we have so many government programs, whether it's Section 8 housing or Obamacare or all the rest. And when they say, you hear these commercials, these pro-comprehensive immigration commercials where they say, you know, and they're not going to be eligible for Obamacare. How long do you think that's going to last? I mean, that'll be the next big battle. Is why are we making these people second-class citizens? And, and you know that a few years down the road, even if they're not eligible for it right now, they sure as heck will be in the near future. And who foots the bill? The American taxpayer.
And we're advertising for food stamp programs in Mexico. I mean, we're advertising that we give away free food in Mexico. Tell me that isn't a dangling carrot for someone to say, hey, I guess I'm going to go to the United States and get some free food.
Yeah, it certainly is.
So there's the problem, isn't it? I mean, we've identified the problem. It's the motivation and ultimately the American taxpayer being stuck to pay for someone else's mouth and mouths to feed.
Yep, that's what's happening. It's just the same thing that it's happened domestically here. You know, we've got far too many Americans that have become caught up on the spider web of the social network or the dole, basically. You know, people get used to all those free things, and they end up, unfortunately, not supporting themselves or their own families and become dependent upon their fellow citizens.
How many generations? How many generations? You know, there's
many.
The whole
war
on poverty and the, you know, the Great Society and all these programs are kicked in with the best of intentions, have done absolutely nothing to bring people out of poverty. It's broken. It's there. And I'm convinced that the focus is incorrectly on immigration and illegal immigration, and everything should be directed to social welfare reform.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And you mentioned, Brian, that, you know, this administration in particular is reaching out across the border and waving these enticements around to get on these things. It's happened in this country as well. We actually now have food stamps under this administration have almost doubled. We've gone from about 28 million Americans on food stamps to 49 million Americans on food stamps. And they're actually recruiting people. They're taking tax dollars and making sure that everybody knows what they're entitled to. And you get people on those things, and far too often they never get off.
Congressman Shabbat, I go back to the power of the purse. You have it. Congress has it. It's run by Republicans. Shut it down. That's the best way. Congressman
Shabbat. Well, if that happens, I certainly hope that it does.
Congressman Shabbat, always good to talk to you. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to speaking with you again. And have a great week,
Brian.
My friend. 756.
Thank you.
756, 1-on-757, 55 KRC, the talk station. Coming up at the top of the hour, Shannon Hartkemeyer, another one, fed up with local politics, running for township trustee. We'll get her insights right after these brief words.